This is Mu'taz Jabir from Generation Justice, and I'm speaking with Jenna Jahab. Jenna has been reporting from occupied Palestine since she was 7 years old and is currently the youngest journalist in the world to hold accredited press credentials. Jenna, welcome to Generation Justice.
Thank you.
Please share with us more about yourself.
My name is Jenna. I'm 13 years old. I live in Nabi Saleh, which is a village in the West Bank in Palestine, and I'm the youngest journalist in the world. And I started when I was 7 years old, when I realized that there were not enough journalists because of things that happened in Nabi Saleh and in Palestine in general. And I wanted to be the voice of those children. And I'm also the ambassador of Shamsan, which is an initiative that we created 3 years ago, like to just raise awareness about children's stories and speak and their voices and speak more about it.
You come from a family of activists and freedom fighters. Will you share with us the story of your family?
Of course. I come from an activist family. Also, I was raised in Nabi Saleh, which is basically full of the Tamimi family. A lot of members of my family are activists, like Atami, my cousin, like Basim Tamimi, like my mom, like a lot of other people. And of course, we have a lot of activists that got highlighted, but a lot of other activists that are not highlighted, but that doesn't mean that we don't have a lot of other activists, because we're all cooperating and just resisting this occupation. The special thing about Nabi Saleh is that women and children, they are the leaders of the demonstration, the leaders of our resistance. And a lot of children and women got arrested. A lot of them got injured and killed. And even last year, they were, like, the Israeli occupation was concentrating on the village a lot. About 23 person was in jail, which is a very huge percentage of the village's population, and including 13 child from them. And yeah, so I was raised into an activist family who has a lot of activists. We were always raised on resisting this occupation any way we can and just standing up for all the injustice that is happening.
Thank you for sharing that. Tell us more about you as a young journalist from occupied Palestine.
So I started journalism when I was only 7 years old, when I realized that there were not enough journalists to cover things that happened in Nabi Saleh, like losing a lot of my friends, like seeing my friends getting injured, my family members getting arrested. So I felt the urge to just cover all those things and send this message to the world and be the voice of those children, the voice of those feelings when you get arrested as a child, when you get shot, or when your family member get killed. And I started reporting when I was in a demonstration. So it was like I grew in an activist family. Two members of my family were journalists, actually, my uncle Bilal and my aunt Nariman. So, you know, they were very, you know, supportive of me. But I saw them, you know, as journalists getting shot and, like, getting targeted specifically because of them trying to cover whatever is happening. And then I took my mother's phone on a Friday and just reported this demonstration. Maybe after a month, my mom found about 5 reports on her phone and then posted them on her Facebook page. And that's how I started.
Can you share a little bit of what it's like to live in occupied Palestine under the control of the Israeli Defense Forces?
So, as I said, it's very hard to live under this Israeli occupation forces and this Israeli occupation in general, Israeli military occupation. So, living under it, it's very hard because, like, as I said, we face checkpoints, and those Israeli checkpoints in the West Bank are not checkpoints, but are barriers on the street that just are preventing you from going to your school or anything. And it's not only a struggle for me as a student, but it's a struggle, for example, for my grandma, who started doing kidney dialysis 3 years ago. Somehow, much tear gas she used to inhale, and not right now. She has to go to the hospital 3 days a week, and sometimes she can't. A lot of women gave birth to their children on those checkpoints in the cars because they couldn't reach the hospital in time. A lot of patients can't go to the hospital. And we also, you know, a lot of children get detained because of them trying to defend their family, trying to defend themselves, their lives, their houses. And as I said, a lot of children get arrested because we basically got subjected to Israeli military court, which says if you're 12 years old and up, you can get arrested, you can get interrogated, you can get treated like a criminal just because of you trying to send your message or trying to do whatever for Palestine. And a lot of those children get arrested, about 500, 700 child between the ages of 12 and 17 get arrested every year from 2000 till now. More than 10,000 Palestinian child under 18 got arrested and got subjected during this arrest to a lot of stuff, for example, to interrogation, which you get subjected to solitary confinement, you get long-term handcuffs, get subjected to physical violence or verbal abuse, and you get long-term handcuffs, blindfolded, and it's very hard. Just imagine a 12-year-old child getting subjected to all of that. And living under this occupation is not easy at all because you are not living normally and you are, most of your rights are getting violated, your childhood. You cannot live your childhood. For example, if I just wanted to go outside and just play soccer with my friends on the street, the Israeli occupation soldiers would sometimes raid the village and start shooting at us gas canisters because of us trying to live our childhood and play like any other person around the world.
Wow, that's really upsetting. Where do you find the courage to keep going, even though you've lived in such horrendous experiences?
You know, just thinking about how we would live without that occupation just gives you that push to just resist this occupation. How we can live in freedom, how we can live in justice and equality like any other person around the world, how we can just gain our childhood back and live the life we deserve as Palestinians. It just gives you that push to continue resisting and to fight for that life. And just seeing a lot of, you know, seeing a lot of people paying the price of freedom, getting killed, getting arrested, just, you know, you feel just like that's enough. We're just tired of all of that that's happening. We're tired of children getting killed, injured, and arrested. We just want to live a normal life.
What do you think is important for people who don't have the experience of living in this occupation to know?
So, of course, a lot of people need to be aware of what's happening. They need to educate themselves. They need to know that we as Palestinian children living under this military occupation are not safe in any place we are. Even in our houses, we're not safe. Our parents cannot protect us because we are all occupied by this military and Israeli occupation. And like our lives, there is no day that can be planned because it can be ruined by this occupation because of the checkpoints, because you can get arrested, you can get killed, you can get injured in any time. And I think everyone has to educate themselves about what's happening. They need to be aware of how we're living under this occupation.
Tell us a little bit about your U.S. tour and what your vision is for this tour.
So I started my tour on July 10th. And I went to New Jersey, to New York, to Washington, D.C. I went to Detroit, to Oregon, and to Oakland. And I'm right now in San Francisco. Right now I'm in Los Angeles. I'm going to Chicago and to Florida to basically raise awareness about what's happening, to talk about how our rights are getting violated. And when I was in Washington, I did an advocacy and I went to the Congress, met with a couple of Congress people, a lot of representatives and senators, including Betty McCollum and Rashida Tlaib, and interviewed them. And, you know, it's very important to send our message to those people who have the power to change what's happening with us. And it was pretty nice and it was very impressing. And, you know, I expected more of them, but it's very that feeling that you're just raising awareness and just talking about those children that are suffering every day is very nice, but we just want to live a normal childhood.
So far, how have you been received in the U.S.?
So when I came here on the speaking tour, you know, I expected a lot more to see here in America, but it was sad because I saw how the Israeli propaganda is very strong here in America. Although I met with a lot of groups of people, with African Americans, with Native Americans, with immigrants, with Arab Americans, and with a lot of other, you know, groups. And it was very impressive to see how diverse it is, but it was very sad to see how they're also suffering. And coming here to America, there are a lot of amazing people that, you know, hosted us. We met with a lot of other people, like we met with Abby Martin. We met with a lot of people that are very supportive of our issue in a lot of groups like JVP and If Not Now. And it was very amazing to see how people are right now standing up for this injustice that is going on in the world. And it was very nice to see that people are knowing a bit about it and people are standing up, even in the Congress. You know, we saw that in legislation bill HR 2407, which called to ending the funding of the Israeli military, including the Israeli military detention, killing the Palestinian children, not only in Palestine but all the countries around the world. And it was very nice to see that people are actually knowing more, but unfortunately people are also still affected by the Israeli/American propaganda. Like, for example, even Betty McCombe, when I interviewed her and asked her about what she believes in, she was like, she believed in the two-state solution, which is very, it was very confusing for us. But it's amazing, and I expected a bit more of the people, but hopefully in a couple of years, people would be more aware about what's happening. People would be knowing their rights, knowing how other people are supposed to be treated around the world.
Have other Palestinian youth begun to start reporting?
Well, I believe that there are millions of ways of resistance, and every one of us has their own way of resistance. So a lot of my friends, they resist in their own way. Like, as far as I know, like, not really a lot of children were reporting, but they were resisting in their own way. Like, for example, by singing, by art, by poems, by drawing, by a lot of other stuff. And those types of resistance are the way to freedom and the way to send our message. And it's really working. And we all have to figure out our way to resist that fits our life and just resist with it, because we need to resist and we need to stand up for this injustice that's happening. And I also want to talk a bit about our initiative, which was created 3 years ago. It's called Shamsan, and we started it to just create a platform for the Palestinian children and their stories. And we interviewed about 300 Palestinian child, including a child called Ahmed Dawabshi, if you guys heard about him. So Ahmed Dawabshi, we didn't really interview them, but it was like an artistic way of resistance. So we made them just draw something which represents their lives or something they've been through or how they want their life to be. So one of the 300 children that were interviewed was Ahmed Dawabshi. And Ahmed Dawabshi at the time was 4 years old, and he's from a village called Duma next to Annapolis. And what happened to Ahmed Dawabshi is that it was a normal night to his family. He was sleeping in his house with his small family, him, his mom, his dad, and his 18-month-old brother, Ali. And out of nowhere, the Israeli settlers from the settlement right next to Duma came and raided the village under the protection of the Israeli occupation soldiers. And they came and raided the village, and one of those settlers just started shooting Molotov cocktails at the house that Ahmed was in. And the first Molotov cocktail that broke the window came in the baby's bed, and the baby was burnt alive. And just maybe some of the people that are hearing are parents. So the first and the natural reaction as a parent to do is to go try to save their child. So both the parents try to go save the 18-month-old child that was getting burned. Ahmed just ran to the living room. But when they were trying to save that child that unfortunately was never saved, like, more Molotov cocktails were getting shot at them. So the baby was burnt alive. The dad died after one day because of those severe burns. The mom stayed in a coma for a whole month and then also died. And the only survivor of this family was Ahmed Dawabshi. So Well, Ahmed, when we interviewed Ahmed Dawabshi, when he drew something, so what he drew was he started drawing the house of his. So when he was drawing the house, he colored it with very, very, very bright yellow. And although his house is right now black of how much it's burned, and he started drawing after that his brother that was the 18-month-old brother playing on a bicycle right next to him. He drew himself holding an umbrella because he cannot get exposed to sunlight because of the severe burns that he was subjected to. And he also, after that, drew animals like chicken and other stuff around him. And it was very nice, and he colored it with very bright colors. And the strange and odd thing that he drew was two suns in the sky, one on the right corner and one on the left corner. And we asked him, why did you draw two suns? We have only one sun in the sky. And he was like, okay, that's my picture, and I want my world to be extra sunny and brighter. And also psychologically, if you explain his drawing, those two sons were his dead parents. And that's why we called it Shamsan. Shamsan means two sons in Arabic. So we did a lot of campaigns for the Palestinian children, the Palestinian child prisoners, for the Palestinian education. We did the Global Walk for Freedom and like a lot of other stuff, like trying to teach the children how to act or how to basically to know their rights during interrogation or during this arrest. And I believe it's very important for all the people around the world to hear those children's stories. And again, thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to speak, and I really appreciate it.
That's beautiful. Is there anything else you would like to add?
I'd like to tell everyone that what they can do for Palestine, they can basically be aware and raise awareness about what's happening. They have to stand up and try to hold Israel accountable for whatever they're doing, for the hurt that they're causing for a lot of people. They also need to call their representatives and ask them to co-sponsor the bill, H.R. 2407, Betty McCollum's bill, No Way to Treat a Child, which calls for the ending of the funding of the Israeli military occupation, including detaining children, arresting children, killing children. And we all need to stand up for this injustice and put hand to hand to make this world a world of peace, a world of love, a world of equality and justice.
Jenna, thank you. You've inspired so many people, including myself. It's great to know that a Palestinian like you is representing us. And
thank you.
It's great to know that you're representing our country in a beautiful way. And
thank you.
You're giving out the truth. And it really just lets everybody know what's going on.
Thank you very much. And I really appreciate it.
For Generation Justice, I'm Mataj David.